Yes, the A-League is back and so too is the Fox Football Podcast. Delighted to be here. Delighted to have you all listening for another big campaign. The Fox Football Podcast is the number one place to go for analysis and football discussion. And myself, Daniel Garb, along with Simon Hill, will lead the way on a Monday. Adam Peacock and his friends will do that later on in the week. Simon, good to see you.
Great to see you, Garby. Good to be back. Talking about the A-League again, it's been a long time between drinks, hasn't it?
It has been.
How was your off-season? Good?
Yeah, enjoyable. Really enjoyable. But I really enjoyed having football back. I thought it was a wonderful opening weekend.
It was, with the exception of something that we'll talk about. We should introduce our guest. He's going to be semi-regular this season.
You would think
so. If he wants to be.
Yeah, well, and depending on performance.
And if the money lasts, you know, to pay him a big salary.
Tom Smithies, chief football writer of the Daily Telegraph here in Sydney, with us. Hello, Thomas.
Hello there. How are we, gents?
Very good. You're a happy boy with Southampton doing okay at the moment?
They didn't play at the weekend.
It's, yeah, well, that's what I mean.
It's national break, in case you hadn't noticed.
That's what I mean.
You
did well.
Hey, you stole that joke from me earlier.
I know, it's a dad joke.
You know, talking about that pre-season, I was chatting to Nigel Bougard when the Jets played a friendly against the Wanderers a few weeks ago, and probably a couple of months ago now, and we worked out that in his life, he spent 49 weeks in pre-season.
Is that right?
A year of his life.
And another 49 serving suspensions for his red cards. Actually, do you know, he hasn't had a red card, I think, in three seasons now. He's obviously changed his game.
It's the sound of a man being jinxed.
They had the bye.
Watch him round one against the Mariners.
Yeah, they had the bye round one. So round two, he's primed, you would think, in the derby. Tom, good to see you. Let's get straight into it. We're going to start the podcast this time around on a Monday with our influence of the week or something that caught your eye from the weekend that really stands out. Tom, we'll give you the honours as our guest today to go first. Something that caught your eye from the weekend.
Well, I'm going interstate and I was impressed with Brisbane Roar. Just as I was when they beat Sydney FC in the FFA Cup, what seems like a lifetime ago now, back in the depths of August. There's something about that team. Then there's, as we know, Robbie Fowler's brought in a bunch of guys from the UK, and they're none of them are rock stars, but they have a sort of certain level of ability and positional awareness. And I remember that first minute of that game against Sydney FC, they got round the back of Sydney just with a very simple move, but it was just smacked of football people. And I thought the same. They kept, even when they were chasing that goal, the goal down yesterday, they didn't just hoist the ball in. They moved the ball around and they deserved the equaliser, really well-worked equaliser in the end, thanks to VAR. That's just for you, Simon. But I thought it was a very promising start and I enjoyed the way Robbie Fowler celebrated with his players afterwards. Looked like they're in a unit there. I guess there are question marks over how many goals they'll score this year. But as a team, I think they're going to be decent to watch and very competitive.
We'll talk about them later on in the podcast. I want to get into more detail on Robbie. I just think he's done everything right up to this point and it was great to see on the weekend. So we'll get into that a bit later on with every single game that we'll look back on. The Socceroos as well, some other big talking points, including your Twitter questions and the big talking point that Simon Hill is back on Twitter, which is something that caught my eye over the weekend. It's not my subject that I want to focus on, but with that in mind, Simon, take it away. I think I know what you might be focusing on from the weekend.
Well, let's be honest, the big influence of the weekend was Chris Griffiths-Jones in the VAR booth.
That was paying $1.
Yeah, well, he was, you know.
I mean, you're bringing it up, I mean.
I think in future years, you know, kids are going to grow up with posters of Chris Griffiths-Jones on their wall because, you know, he's the main man, isn't he?
He probably worked harder than just about anybody at the weekend.
He did.
He did both games on Saturday, Friday night as well. That's a big stint.
It is. Anyway, look, we're going to talk more about VAR, so I'm not going to bang on about it, but obviously that was, you know, the weekend's main talking point, unfortunately, in my opinion.
Well, I'll bring it back to the footballing sense because it's something that caught my eye that I really enjoyed watching on the weekend. You've banged on about VAR for a couple of years. I've been banging on about this whenever it's come to my attention, and that is Tommy Orr playing in a central position.
Just want to point out here, your bugbear's VAR, yours is OAR. Thank you very much.
Here all week, like the schnitzel.
Very good. Tommy Orr, he shot to prominence playing for Utrecht as the number 10. That's when he went to another level. And for whatever reason, he's been shunted out on the wing for a large part of his career because that's the position he grew up playing. And against weak opposition, he does quite well there. But as a number 10, I think his best attributes come to the fore. He played in that position for the Mariners on the weekend, top of the diamond, had a free role. He could move wide when he wanted to. The Mariners' first goal comes from Tommy Orr, picking it up in a deep position, turning, and the Mariners go. And then they almost scored late in the game to go 2-1 up again. Tommy Orr breaking from a central position to get them going once more. His lack of speed gets diluted in a central position, and he's got really good close ball control, and he can pass the ball really well in tight spaces as well. This is a guy who was a regular in the Socceroos for so many years. I'm not saying he'll get back there, but it's good to see him expressing himself and enjoying his football once more. And that position brings the best out of him. He's captain. He was captain on the weekend. Maybe we'll see Tommy Orr enjoying a bit of a renaissance this season.
It's good, obviously, to see him fit because he suffered that horrendous injury at Leichhardt. Like a freak accident, wasn't it? He landed, I think he went up for a header or a challenge or something, and landed on his left leg. And I remember seeing it bent backwards. Yeah. You knew that he was in trouble. And Tommy's had a few injuries down the years. And I mean, I haven't spoken to him about it, but you would imagine at his point of his life, his football life, not that he's old by any stretch of the imagination, but he must have been thinking, God, again. You know, I don't know the mentality of footballers, but when you have an injury that's obviously going to keep you out for a long period of time and you've had a couple of them, you must be thinking, do I want to do this? So credit to him to come back from that and to get back playing again. I'm with you. I'm not sure he'll make the Socceroos again because he was played out on the left mainly for the Socceroos. Mm. And I think Australia have a lot of options in that central position. But I agree, it's good to see him playing well. And the Mariners need him this season if they're going to have a better campaign.
Well, they looked a lot better against Western Sydney, that's for sure, on Saturday. So encouraging signs. But let's go back to Friday night, the season opener. Yes, VAR dominated it, but it was a wonderful opening to the A-League season, wasn't it? Full of excitement, full of goals, and pretty good football. And both sides have plenty of positives to take out of it. The champions, though, off to a winning start.
Yeah, they were very good. Both teams, it was a cracking game. Unfortunately, and I am going to touch on VAR here, I think that it spoiled. Look, it got the decisions right. I'm not denying that. And I know the pedants will say, well, you know, you've got to have the right decisions. I understand that point of view. The time that it took, we've done a little breakdown here. So for the handball against Jakobsen for the first penalty, 1 minute 54. For the Alhassan Toure goal, 1 minute 38. And for the Costa Barbarousis disallowed goal, 1 minute 22. Now, in total, across the entire weekend, we lost. Well, we didn't lose because the refs will have added the time on. But the time it took for the VAR to make the decisions collectively in the six incidents, and yes, they got them all right, 11 minutes, 39 seconds.
That's too long.
Way too long.
Yeah, they've got to be better at that.
I think the part of the issue is, I think when with the offside line, people assume it gets done automatically. They have to sit and draw that. They have an operator who sits there and kind of triangulates it all and puts dots on players and stuff, and that does take a while. And we've gone into this new brave new world based on that disallowed goal in the grand final.
Yeah,
Sydney FC.
That's why they've done.
Should
it.
Have taken the lead. You couldn't tell by the naked eye because of the.
I thought you could,
pitch.
But anyway.
But $150,000, Tom, that they've invested in this Hawkeye technology. Would that $150,000 not be in a game that's not exactly flush with cash? Would that not have been better, you know, put towards promotion, marketing of the league, and getting bums on seats pre-season? Instead, we've invested that on drawing squiggly lines on TV screens.
Well, at least it's getting the league talked about.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, I'm with Simon on that. You put that money into a marketing blitz because the Barbarousas one for me, and it's the same in the Premier League. We're not on our own with these ones. Like, it's the end of his shoelace or bootlace or his half of one stud that might be over. Are we really deciding offsides on that?
Well, the problem with
the rest of the decisions across the weekend, I thought were all spot on, and they
are
Brisbane
correct.
One
all
in
of them
particular.
Are correct.
I know, but that one, I'm not sure if it actually is. Like, how can you actually tell that
there is an issue
offside?
Between because anyway. It's done by someone just clicking pause. So you choose your camera frame, you're trying to get it as close as you can to when the ball is kicked, but it's a 50th of a second, and it's been calculated that Raheem Sterling can move 13 centimetres in that time. Now, all right, A-League players aren't going to move quite as far, but can you then go to an offside decision of 2 centimetres? Is it just too arbitrary? You know, we've seen issues with ball tracking in cricket. It's the same thing. Do you need an umpire's call? Where it's that, because you go, you know what, it's too close.
On the Barbarousas one, yes.
If we can't do it in 25 seconds.
Goal.
But this is the problem. We're now forensically examining, you know, frame by frame, bits of football, Are they actually seeking to gain an advantage? What happened to the clear and obvious error? And I hear a lot of people, including, you know, officials within the game saying, well, this is the way that the world is going. You know, the Premier League has it. Yeah, well, the Premier League doesn't have a salary cap either. It has a second division and promotion and relegation.
Just, you know, links well, two of your bugbears together, you know, brilliantly.
But we're unique when it suits us and not in other areas. I just think it's in a league that's trying to grow and attract spectators, what we really need is goals and entertainment. And I'm jumping ahead in the rundown here. Sorry, Garby. But, you know, the Melbourne derby on Saturday, it wasn't the best game. It was a bit stale. We had one moment of exquisite brilliance, of pure joy, when Toivonen threaded a beautiful ball through. Cam Soba nets it, his first A-League goal. He wheels away, triple somersaults, backflips, the crowd going mental. And the fun police have killed it because half his jock strap was offside.
Okay, but in the Brisbane game, we had that moment and it would have been disallowed because the linesman put his flag up. But we got that moment because VAR intervened. That's the other side of it.
Well, I agree. And it took 2 minutes for that one to be. I'm not saying they got the decisions wrong, but to me, it's just, it's against the spirit of football, if not against the laws. I understand why the clubs want it. Because, you know, they want everything forensically right. But I think that we forget the supporters. Now, I know that they want to introduce this, the audio, that's the conversation between the referee and the VAR. I think that's a good thing. If you're going to have this, we need to have that for the spectators, not only at home, but also in the ground, whether they can hear it over the tannoy or not, I don't know. But at least they need to know what's going on. At the moment, we have these interminable delays where referees and footballers are standing around and the crowd's going, you know, I'm going to have to leave in a minute because my train's due in a quarter of an hour. I think we've got to remember that this is a game for supporters. That's the important thing.
I think they'll get better on the delays. In their defence here in Australia, we had massive problems for 18 months and then they only went to the clear and obvious error. And the second half of last season, it was actually far better VAR. So I'll back them to work on the issue we had on the weekend, which was the time it took. And to cut that down dramatically.
Are you a fan, Tom?
I think I'm a pragmatist. And this is the way the world is going. And we're not going to undo this now. So we might as well try and make it the best that we can. And they won't do the line for... They'll only draw the line for the really tight offsides. Really, most of them... I think we've had, three in a weekend, which have required that the line to be drawn, and that takes the time. Most weekends, you're not going to get that many close decisions where a goal scored and they've got to do it. So it's been a bit of a shocker in that sense. Most of the time, the VAR is going to look on the naked eye and go, yeah, that's fine, or no, that's off. And then they will get quicker.
Well, you're right. I mean, this is the way that the world is going. And, you know, I accept that I'm probably in a minority these days. It seems that everybody wants this because it's the topic that everybody wants to discuss.
There's lots of people like you who don't. I think the point is it's here for now. So it's not, yeah. I'm not saying it won't ever be taken off, but it's here for now. Let's try work with it as best we can.
Last point on this. I just prefer, as I said on Friday, Alassane Toure debut goal, Cam Soba debut goal in the A-League on Saturday, McGowan scoring against his hometown club with the winner, Barbarossa's first goal for Sydney. All of that stuff paled into insignificance because we were talking about officialdom and VARs. And I think that's really sad. We should be talking about football.
Sure, but we can talk about football. We've got to touch on VAR, but we can also massage the discussion and influence it, if you like, and let's bring football to prominence. Let's talk about the positives to come out of Friday night. Yes, Alassane Toure, Adelaide, Bruce Chatey backing him, picking this kid, promoting him through to the first team. He gets the nod up front ahead of Opseth, the international signing, and he delivers and he brings them back to 2-2. It was a wonderful moment, even though we had a bit of a delay.
Yeah, there were a lot of kids played across the weekend. I saw a stat that there was something like 550 minutes played by Australian teenagers as opposed to five.
Yep.
On top of that, you've got the new rule about a couple of extra under 23s on the bench. Unfortunately, it's optional. I'd quite like to see it made mandatory just because then at least you do have the kids on the bench every week. And it is still down to the coach. I mean, for every Verbeek, you've got a Warren Joyce, you know, who's not inclined to play the kids. And also in a league where there's, or country where there's so few jobs for the coaches, it's still a brave coach who'll put his faith in a bunch of teenagers who may mess up and cost him his job.
But at least they're getting that experience, even if they're only sitting on the bench. They're being involved in the match day experience,
exactly.
And they've got to be ready to play and that mindset. So I think it's a good initiative. I rate it. And, you know, as has been seen by that stat that you just quoted, the kids are getting an opportunity. And that's fantastic. On Alhassan Touré, I mean, wow. I think he could be something really special. I don't want to, you know, he's only played one A-League game. But we saw him in the FFA Cup. He's strong, he's got good positional sense, and he knows where the back of the net is. And I think most crucially, and I haven't spoken to him, so I don't know, but he seems a very confident young man on the football pitch. I don't think he's overawed by any of it. So I think potentially, without putting too much pressure on him, he's got a big future.
I reckon Ryan McGowan was the most underrated off-season signing.
That's
a good
check.
Barely any discussion around him coming back. A Socceroo with plenty caps. He can play right back, he can play in the centre. His experience will be handy for Sydney, and he delivered with the goal as well in his hometown. I think his signing by the Sky Blues has not been discussed enough.
It's been quite a fun debate between the Wanderers and the Sydney FC who got the better McGowan.
Well, they're living next door to each other, aren't they?
They are indeed. I'd say Ryan at the moment is ahead. I mean, yeah. Dylan's a really good old-fashioned solid defender. He's not amazing with the ball, but you know, you won't get past him most of the time. Ryan McGowan has played against some very good strikers in China.
Yeah.
Because he used to talk about, you know.
Thought you were going to say for Bradford then.
Well, that too.
And he's also the answer to a very good trivia question in Australia. Who played the ball for Tim Cahill for that wonderful goal against the Netherlands?
Yeah.
I've got a good story on Ryan as well. So I was speaking to him pre-game in Adelaide on Friday night. And I said, because obviously he's a South Australian. So I said, how many friends and family have you got coming tonight? He said, oh, I've got about 20. He said, unfortunately, my auntie in Australian. Southern English, sorry. She phoned me, said she doesn't really know too much about, you know, what I do. She still thinks at some point I'm going to get a proper job. So she phoned me and said, look, I can't make it tonight because I've got something else on, but don't worry, I'll come next week. And he said, no, you don't quite understand. I play for Sydney.
Well, from Ryan McGowan to Dylan McGowan, he had a win as well on Saturday afternoon for the return to Wonderland. We've been waiting 3 years for this. The club most certainly has. Was it everything you thought it would be? The result was for Western Sydney. VAR assisted as well. But what did you make of it all?
Well, the cheese platter in the media room was absolutely top draw. In fact, it's an all-time high for the A-League. It really is. It's
better than the Wonder Dog?
It was better, the best pre-match food that's been provided. So
Has the Wonder Dog gone?
I hope it's gone, buried, interred, burnt, cremated. One-way trip to a heart attack, that was. The performance
of the Blue Cheese or Western Sydney?
Of Western Sydney was kind of what you would expect of a team. This is a team that's massively overhauled, and they have had their creative hub ripped out of them. I mean, Radoslaw Majewski had a quiet pre-season, but there were glimpses in that game against Sydney United, for instance, of what he could do. And I think he was starting to get on the same wavelength as some of the players. And then to suffer that horrible injury, they've got no one else like him at the club. So they don't have a number 10. They don't have a creative force. And that was painfully apparent. And they're talking to a whole bunch of players. There was an African player playing in Saudi at one point was in the mix. So that's gone quiet. There's all sorts of people they're looking at. They need a number 10. But the stadium itself, there was, 17,000, which, let's not get ahead of ourselves, for a team that's been rubbish for 3 years. Yeah. That's a really good crowd in pouring rain as well. It will hum for the derby. I cannot wait for that.
Was it a good atmosphere there, Tom?
It was a decent atmosphere.
Yeah.
The Mariners fans were very good. There were three figures, there were hundreds of them, occupied at half a bay, made a bit of noise. I was really impressed. I wrote a piece last week saying what's the point of the Mariners, which upset a lot of people there. It was hypothetical. I'm not saying get rid of them, but you have to question a team that keeps coming last. But these crap fans weren't questioning. They were coming down and they were rewarded with a very good display from Alan Stadich's side. So it was, the rain was a shame. It would have been, you know, a nice sunny day. You'd have got more people there. But the RBB was back in reasonable numbers. Now it's all down to the team and how they play at this new stadium.
You say they need a number 10, but I know Mitch Duke, that's not his position, but geez, he's a good footballer. I thought he was awesome on Saturday afternoon, dropping off the front line, picking it up, turning. He's not the traditional number 10 in terms of creativity, but I think through industry, he can almost play that role or fill that void while they have a gap with Majewski out. I thought his game was excellent, and he's been around the Socceroos since Arnie's come back. You look at Taggart, McLaren, Giannu. I think Duke can join and make that four, without a standout option, four good options for Arnie to look at. And then whoever's in the best form perhaps gets a nod. I think he'll be right around the national team mix.
Well, the good thing about Mitch is that he can play anywhere along that front line. He can lead the line on his own. He can play as one of a two. He can play on the left. He can play on the right. He can play in the hole. And I think, you know, that versatility and that game awareness has been developed to quite a large degree by his stint in Japan. He was there for, was it 4 or 5 years with Shimizu?
And played a whole variety of positions there.
He did. And didn't get a look in for some reason for the Socceroos. It was almost like he was out of sight, out of mind. I know he was a bit irritated by that as well. So it's good to see him back in the national team mix. And I agree with you. It's, you know, it's a big season ahead for him. And now that he's captain, he's got a lot of responsibility on his shoulders as well. I think it's great. I think he looks as though he's thriving upon it. Underlined by his goals.
He does look a leader, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, with that club over the last few years, you've wondered who the real leader of the team was. He steps out with that armband, leads the team out, and it really looks as if it fits.
Absolutely. He's really grown into the role of speaker, of being a front man. He came out and did the media after the game, partly because he'd score the goals, but partly just because he's comfortable with it.
Yep.
Doesn't mind a microphone in his face. Even the day that he signed in January, I sat down with him at Bicentennial Park at Homebush, and he was talking, we need to lift the standards of training. We need to be more intense. We need to do this. It was, and not arrogant, just this is what I'm used to, and this is what if we're going to get back to the top, this is the kind of stuff we have to do. I'm not convinced, though, that he's a number 10. I know Daniel McBreen did it at the Mariners under Arnie, but they need someone with the eye for a pass.
Sure. I don't think he is a number 10. My point is when he drops off, he can just fill that void a little bit. But they do need more creativity. You compare them to the other contenders, Sydney and Perth, and they do have a gap in that front three, especially with Meyer not performing on the weekend. I mean, that was one of the talking points from that game. In the big marquee Bundesliga top scorer from years ago.
No,
he wasn't up to it on the weekend,
was
he?
While,
of course it will. I'm saying his first performance wasn't what we expected, was it?
I didn't think he got any service whatsoever. I mean, he laid the ball off competently enough, but there wasn't a single cross to his head.
Yeah.
This bloke who scores goal, and he's bigger than everyone else on the pitch.
If you look at Alexander Meyer's highlights, I asked him this in a pre-season interview. Yeah, he's a massive unit. He doesn't actually score a lot of goals with his head. It's all around the box with his feet. He's very clever with the ball at his feet. And I think we tend to make that assumption when you see a player that looks like Peter Crouch, you go, right, he's going to be strong in the air. And maybe he should be, but I'm not sure that's actually his game.
I didn't say necessarily a high cross.
Good recovery, Tom.
Somewhere in his
good
vicinity.
Recovery.
His finishing in the warm-up was phenomenal. He was putting
so is mine,
top,
to be fair.
No, it's not. That's a lie.
Hey, I won the chip challenge.
Yeah. He put the ball in top corner from outside the box 4 or 5 times.
Yeah.
They're doing the routine where you shoot and then someone puts a cross in. Just scoring, just finishing every time. I know it's only the warm-up, but we've sat through how many players missing those chances. But he needs the service, and I didn't think he got any of any sort.
I'm sure he'll improve from the weekend. The Melbourne Derby, it was a flat game in terms of what it can deliver, but there was a really good crowd there. I actually thought that the standard of football was pretty good. There just weren't many chances.
Yeah.
I thought technically it was a good game, and the pace of it for a round one game was pretty high. We just didn't have enough clear-cut opportunities.
Yeah, they cancelled each other out. And I think, you know, in many ways, Victory's performance was probably due to the fact that that was their first competitive game in a couple of months. City, of course, didn't have that excuse, but they were without their main focal point in Jamie McLaren. So they had to rejig the team around a little bit. But I agree with you. I thought there were elements to their play that were very, very good. I think the Uruguayans have got big potential. Whether they'll both start every week when McLaren is back and one or two others, I'm not sure. I thought the performance of... And you know, sometimes we get carried away with, well, there weren't many goal-scoring opportunities, and there weren't. But there were still plenty to admire in other areas. I thought Harrison Delbridge, and I've been impressed with him in the FFA Cup as well, the way he has stepped up to the plate and filled the breach left by Bart Schenkevel, which is a big hole, big boots to fill. I think he's been superb alongside Curtis Good. He's really assumed that responsibility well. He was terrific. So I thought that there were, you know, good elements to the game. Yeah, could have done with a few more goal-scoring opportunities. And obviously, as we've already mentioned, you know, the VAR denied us what would have been a fantastic moment for Elvis Kamsova.
On Delbridge, I can feel it right now. People going, Garby, you've already touted seven players for the Socceroos.
I'm not going there.
But Arnie loves a big presence.
He's got one. Harry Souter.
I know. And I think that's half the reason he's picked Harry, because of his presence. And he knows it's a competitive advantage for Australia in Asia. He's got a long way to go, Harrison Delbridge. But his size will help him if he keeps this form up when it comes to potentially being selected for Australia. And I think there are already... there is a bit of a focus on him.
I'd love to see you doing a Socceroos press conference, Garvey, with your 79-man squad.
I think the players I've mentioned, deserve to be discussed at this.
It's all about opinions,
he's a long way off. He's a long way off Harrison Delbridge. But on the form he's in right now, I could see him in a year or so's time being around the mark.
Doesn't mind a little battle either, does he? I was going to say he didn't take a backward step with Toivonen when he did, actually, when he went down, but...
they had a good scrap all night.
They did. And it's, that learning process is terrific for Delbridge. Mm. Emotionally, physically, dealing with that, and it's a good sign of temperament that he's not afraid of a ding-dong.
I thought he played really well. The Melbourne victory, I thought, was solid too. There was a lot more to come from both of those sides. But although it was flat as a game on the whole, I thought technically it was pretty good all up. So... reason for encouragement for both teams in that sense. And Eric Mombatz has had his first taste of a derby right now, and Marco Kurz has settled into life as the victory manager.
Good little verbal duel he had at the end as well with Neil Young and Paddy Kisnorbo. Mm. Some things don't change.
So much for Marco.
Marco's still fired up.
We spoke about this last week, and I said the victory, that's one thing they were wary of with Marco Kurz. He's got to fit the victory mould. And yes, Muskie used to fire up as well, but he knew how to speak in front of the cameras when he had that victory blazer on, because he's in the DNA of the club. But that was one of the concerns with Marco. First game, he's already brawling with someone at full time. You can't take it out of him, though. That's
what was
just
it? He said famously at Adelaide, he had a go at the fourth official. What? I have coached in Europe, and you are a fourth official in Australia. Outstanding.
There's no way of nullifying it. It'll come out. You just got to work with it. But he can coach. We know that. Sunday, I thought, was a scriptwriter's dream in the A-League. You had Western United winning their first game and Robbie Fowler getting a last-minute reprieve to earn a point for the Brisbane Roar. But wasn't it a great subplot to the Wellington-Western United game, the curry that Mark Rudin copped? And that, I don't know if anyone's seen the image, but it's a wonderful sporting image, never mind just in the A-League, of Mark Rudin walking past the Phoenix fans after the game with a sign that says, "One thief, three traitors." And Rudin, just with this expression on his face, it says, "Oops, sorry, boys. I'm out of here with the 3 points, thank you."
But it's a great storyline. It's great to build some rivalries, and that's what you need, personalities and storylines. It's about narrative. And sometimes in the A-League, we don't have enough of that. So I thought this was a very good... A lot of people, when their fixtures came out, why are you sending Western United over to Wellington first round of the season? Wouldn't you give them a home game? Well, no, this was perfect, actually, with the Rudin return. And, Andy Durante as well, who spent a lot of years with Wellington Phoenix. I thought overall their performance was very good, which underlined what I said on the season preview. I'm tipping them for the top six. Bessart Berisha showing that he can still score goals at A-League level, and how good was Diamante?
Amazing.
Mm. He's a good player.
One particular through ball down the inside left, just the sort that makes you sort of yelp when you're watching on the couch.
Are you worried about Wellington, Garby?
Yes, extremely. I think they will be... Put it this way, I think we'll have the same discussions about Wellington and their future this season as we did 2 years ago.
But that's gone, hasn't it, with the independent A-League?
I know, but not necessarily their future. We'll ask them what the point of them is. You speak about the Mariners, we'll be saying, what's the point of Wellington? Because I fear they'll be dragging the chain again. You look at their squad, where is the quality?
Yeah, and a coach who's got everything to prove. We forget, Mark Rudin did very well there, but we forget how well he'd done at MPL level before that. Not forget, but he'd done an old-fashioned apprenticeship in that.
Well, he's sort of done that, hasn't he? I mean, he's number two to Steve Corriker, and he was coach of the junior national team. So, I mean, he's not a total greenhorn, but...
He doesn't have the quality.
No, he doesn't.
The score, I mean, you looked through that 11 on the weekend, and you went, without Liberato Cacace, there's no one there who really resonates. Mm.
Yeah, tough. Maybe they've gone in a different direction. And the one thing I do like about it is that they've employed a lot more, seemingly on paper at least, a lot more New Zealanders, which, you know, after all, should be the raison d'etre of club. Maybe they're going down that road. We talk about the youngsters over here. Maybe it's just that we don't know how good they can be yet. And I saw somebody make a comparison. I think it was Paul Eiffel said that Callum McCowart, I'm not saying he showed it in round one, potentially is better than Sarpreet Singh. So, you know, maybe he's one to keep an eye on. But certainly, I didn't think they were particularly flash in round one.
The A-League, a development league for the New Zealand national team.
Well, I mean, you know, in fairness for Wellington, if they're going to be in the league, that's got to be part of their reason for being there, isn't it?
For sure.
To develop their football. I know that irritates a lot of people in Australia, but they're there.
Western United have brought in players that can certainly develop Australian football. Diamante, you mentioned. Scott McDonald, I love watching him running around. You know, that's the, by 4 years, the longest gap between a player's first game in Australian football, or last game, before they came back and played another one, if you know what I mean. The biggest gap between games in Australian domestic football.
What was his last club in the NSL?
Morwell Falcons. Yeah.
19 years or something.
Yeah. Wow. So he made his debut there as a 15-year-old, played a season or so, and then went to Europe, and he's only just returned.
Good start.
And he didn't have his best game, but you could see him tie things together. He's the kind of guy who, even if he plays an hour each week, would just add so much to the dressing room. You see the look on his face when they scored. He's just lovely. He was retired 6 months ago, wasn't he? We thought he was done.
No, you saw what he did with Partick Thistle the end of last season, and the way that he kept him up. You know, that he's a galvanising force. He's a great talker. He's a good laugh. He's an old-fashioned footballer. And I think, they'll get maybe a year out of him. And that's they need pros, like senior pros like that.
Well, they've got a lot of them. Mm. I mean, their average age was 31.8, their starting 11 over the weekend. So, obviously, that's a squad that's going to have to be, I mean, they've only played one game, but, you know, at some point towards next season, they're going to have to regenerate that squad quite significantly, aren't they, with some of those other players.
And hopefully it helps them get...
they bought good quality.
Yeah, and hopefully it helps them get a few more thousand fans in for their first game on the weekend.
Yeah.
Brisbane, yeah, I'm with you. That image of Robbie Fowler punching the air, he said in his post-game press conference he wanted to run on the field. I mean, with all that he's achieved in the game, to see that emotion come out of him here in Australia, I just think it's a massive asset for us. He's been waiting for this chance for so long to coach a team in his own right. We've got him in Australia. He's beaten the champions away in the FFA Cup. He's now drawn with the premiers away to start the A-League season. So long to go, and it can all turn very quickly. But at the moment, it's just great. Great to see.
Also going back, you know, to one of his former clubs in the A-League, and I think that's what we... there's been a fair few questions asked about Robbie and his recruitment this off-season. I understand why they've been asked, but, you know, we do tend to forget. He does know this league. He played here for a couple of years, and he's kept in touch with it. I know that for a fact. He watches it, or has watched it, when he was over in the UK. So he'll have known what was required.
Absolutely, and he was one of the few names being talked about in the off-season when we joked about the league's now reduced to marquee coaches. And colleagues of mine, friends of mine who don't really know much about the A-League, they were interested in Robbie Fowler. And the match report that I did on that Brisbane-Sydney FC FFA Cup game is still one of the highest rating things I've written in terms of our website in the last few months.
Yeah. And it's a name that resonates.
It is. And now to go beyond that, he's got to achieve stuff. I mean, if they're bottom of the league after six rounds, then people will just start laughing at him. But on the evidence of yesterday and of the FFA Cup run, I don't think there will be.
Well, the best evidence for mine from yesterday is that they were up against it at halftime. The Glory were dominating play. Economides, Fornaroli, Castro, what a front three that will be. We're having it all on their own terms, creating chances. He didn't panic. He didn't lose his composure. Everyone, and remember, they're playing on a relatively hot day in Perth for those English boys who wouldn't have played in conditions like that away from home often before. They stayed composed and they got back into it and then dominated the second half. They deserved that equaliser enormously.
My question for you, Garby, you're a Perth boy. Well, I think you grew up there, didn't you? Is that right?
Spent 20 years there.
And a Glory fan. You looked at the way that Perth set up yesterday. There was no Franich and there was no Davidson, two real key elements. Yeah. And also, of course, Mats Baranovic. I don't know where he is at the moment.
The great disappearing socceroo.
Yeah, I mean, he was asked, I know, to come back two or three times. They wanted to re-sign him, but he's maybe looking at other options. I don't know. You look at the holes that are perhaps in that team a little bit from last year. Can they, you know, go back-to-back premierships or get to the grand final again?
I think the defence looked solid enough. They missed a left wing back. They just didn't have one. And Popper said James Meredith is not up to Popper levels of fitness, which we know are the extreme.
Formerly was.
Yeah, he was. Well, he was there early, and he's been there for a year about, hasn't he? I mean, he shed all the weight, and he looked really sharp yesterday. But Meredith on the left-hand side will give them a big boost. That will change things, and they need Franjic back. Other than that, I thought the team looked pretty solid, certainly the attacking group. And Gregory Wootrichter at the back looked pretty good as well. I thought he seemed pretty solid. So they'll miss Shane Lowry enormously. That's the big one. Mm. Sporanovic, I mean, you know, it beggars belief that a guy with so much talent just doesn't want to make the most of his career while he's got the opportunity. I mean, this is a guy who could have a football club to play professionally, something all of us would dream of, and he's not actually taking that chance. He's in Croatia right now. I mean, fair play, you can do what you want, but it's mystifying.
He's just come back into the Socceroos squad as well against South Korea. Mm. So maybe he's got options. I don't know.
Yeah, he's pretty calm about his career. I mean, there's been other periods in his life where he's just not been that bothered. He's a very laid-back sort of individual. Mm. But remember, Liverpool were watching him. Brendan Rodgers was keen on him.
He's always made odd choices. He was coming through the Bundesliga looking good. He chose to go to Qatar. Let's be honest, he took the money. He was playing in the Chinese second division and was happy to be there until Ange Postecoglou said, you're not part of the Socceroos if you're playing there. Then he thought, all right, I better move. He did so. World Cup in 2014, he was one of our best players, again, some of the best in the world. I don't know, it's up to him, it's his career, but it's frustrating that a guy with so much talent is choosing not to make the most of it.
Mm, and he potentially is good enough to play against those players.
Of course he is. With the glory last year, whenever he did play, he looked a class above. Mm. But he was probably doing that at 75% when you consider that at the end of the season he chose to leave and hasn't come back. So he obviously wasn't fully into it.
Interesting one, eh?
Mm. Yeah.
Oh, well.
They don't need him against Nepal, though, the Socceroos, that's for sure. They didn't, Nepal. They won't against Chinese Taipei because they're pretty cruisy outings for Australia. But still, there were positives from the game against Nepal. Jamie McLaren scoring 3, and I'm sure there'll be a hatful of goals against Chinese Taipei as well.
I'm sure there will be too. Again, I think the rider against the big win against Nepal was the second half display. It was a little bit stodgy. Okay, Nepal defended a bit better second half and parked the bus a bit, so it was tricky for them to try and play through those gaps. But you expected really that with the quality Australia have in comparison to the opposition that they probably would have scored a few more goals. I think against better opposition, that might be a concern. But obviously Nepal were never going to be good enough to trouble Australia.
Some people are going, you're calling it Nepal. Maybe it is Chinese Taipei. Nepal.
I think Robbie Slater called it Tapai on Thursday night.
Nepal is actually the correct pronunciation.
It is.
People out there shaking their head. I know we've called it Nepal forever and a day, but that's what happens when you play these nations. You learn a bit.
You learn
that is how they pronounce it.
Correct. Yeah.
But the tempo was the thing that I found disappointing, particularly second half. It was like the game was won after 20-something minutes. They were 3-0 up.
Same against Kuwait, wasn't it, really? Yeah. First half, very, very good.
But Kuwait, there was the heat. There was no excuse from that point of view. It was slightly chilly in Canberra, if anything. And I was just disappointed the way... I remember at one point, Matt Leckie made a brilliant angled run along the back four, looking for a ball over the top, and got it. And he was unable to bring it down. But they didn't mix it up enough, in my view. I'm a great... believer in passing football, but occasionally against a defence like that, a ball over the top, when you've got the pace of Leckie and people like that and Goodwin to go on to, it was very ponderous at times.
I think the quality of Nepal dropped the Socceroos standard, and they got into this issue. It was almost like junior football when everyone burst forward and then you look and there's 6 guys in line with the 4 or 5 defenders. And there's actually no one, Kevin Muscat made this brilliant point in commentary, there's no one making the deep run from midfield to get onto the ball with momentum because they're already in that static position. They should have been better at it, but I think the lack of quality from Nepal and the fact that the pace of their game was so slow meant the Socceroos were moving at a pace that even their midfielders couldn't keep up with, and they found themselves standing in static positions in the attacking third.
Yeah, there was not enough depth to the attacking, although that did change a little bit second half with the substitutions.
Adam Taggart will start up front, you would think, against Chinese Taipei, so a chance for him to do what Jamie McLaren did and score 2 or 3. I think you'll find players like Aaron Moy and Matt Leckie, who have got big club responsibilities, will be given a bit of a rest.
Mabil did well off the bench. Mm-hmm. He gave Australia a bit of spark. I'd like to see him start against Chinese Taipei.
There is an issue at left back, I think. Aziz Baij is not playing at the moment. He was given a run out. I think he did slow the Socceroos' attack down at times. Defensively, he's good.
To be fair, he only arrived on Wednesday morning.
Yeah, that, I think that was the biggest
problem. I think Brad Smith or Alex Gersbach have got an opportunity there, especially in these games when Australia is on the front foot, to burst forward, because that is Aziz's weakness.
Alex Gersbach's not playing either, I don't think, at the moment.
But Arnie does like
Brad Smith is.
I think he'll play against Chinese Taipei, and that's a big opportunity for him. He's going well for Seattle in the MLS. At the FFA CEO search, let's touch on this, because I wrote a piece for foxsports.com.au on Friday that John Didlitzer has withdrawn.
Good story, that, Garby.
Thank you.
Stop breaking stories, will you?
Sorry, Thomas.
You're treading on his feet.
Yeah, well, you know, we've got to make sure that they're across all issues these days. But I think that's a huge blow for the FFA, because for me, he was the best candidate.
I don't think he was seen as the best candidate by the people who were going to choose the...
The reason why he's not is because they view this role as being changed now, and that government links are probably the modus operandi. But I think JD could have done that or surrounded himself with people who could.
But he made a very good point in your article that he's in a sort of privileged position in terms of the players, and to be seen to be... looking at a role which is the completely other side of the fence would have been very difficult to manage politically. And he's made, I think, quite an honourable decision in the sense of, you know, I can't be seen to do that. That's separate from whether he was likely to get the job, because it is still an ongoing race and you don't know who's going to say yes, who'll turn it down.
So I think there are other candidates, like James Johnson has been spoken about an awful lot.
Different candidates have different backers.
Yes, they do. It's political. I think James Johnson would be better working off for the clubs in the leagues, whatever that name is going to be, the independent commission or whatever it is. The one I'd be interested in is Brendan Schwab. Now, I think Brendan Schwab is a very, very smart operator, worked for the PFA and FIFA Pro for many, many years, knows all the issues back to front. It's almost like poacher term gamekeeper if he goes to work for the FFA. But I think he's the sort of aggressive, and I mean this in the nicest possible sense, aggressive, forward-thinking, but a very much driven individual that the FFA could do with. I think he could take the game forward quite a long way.
There's a view on people like Brendan Schwab and
but John... But politically it might not be.
Well, yeah, there's that. But the view on people like Brendan Schwab and John Didlitzer that they've only worked with the PFA and they don't have an angle into other aspects of football. That's where I thought John Didlitzer's advantage was, because he'd been a player in the NSL and he'd worked for Melbourne Heart /City for a number of years. So he knew clubland very well too. And he'd done some work with the FFA as a legal counsel. So he was really rounded in that sense. Brendan's a bit more limited in terms of his experience, although he understands football very, very well.
Well, don't forget that before the A-League was designed in the form that it was...
The Australian Premier
League. He's almost like football's intellectual in that sense. He is a real thinker about this. And you talk about Brendan Schwab and his experience. He did design the Australian Premier League, which was a sort of one of the models that was put forward, not quite the one that was used by John O'Neill, but it was all based on having derbies and how, you know, the fan experience, small stadiums, all that kind of stuff. Funnily enough, all the stuff we're now coming back to, and you know, we're going to have three teams in Sydney in order to create more derbies. You've got three in Melbourne for that reason.
Yeah.
Looking at team, you know, how good Sydney FC playing at Leichhardt Oval rather than great empty spaces at Sydney Football Stadium. He's definitely had many long conversations with Brendan Schwab. He is sort of football's intellectual in that sense. He thinks about football issues all the time, and not just from a myopic player-centric point of view. Big passionate advocate for human rights and all that kind of thing.
He's also been a big thorn in the side of the FFA down the years. So maybe it's better to bring your enemies inside the tent.
But think of the people whose side he's been a thorn in.
Yeah.
They're not there anymore.
Correct.
I mean, the whole of the management committee, by and large, is gone.
Yep.
The board is going to be completely changed by Chris Nicu from even a few months ago. By the end of this year. And he's got Alahi and Remo Nogarotto go back a long way. Politically, those two couldn't be pulled more further apart, yet they're quite close. I know Chris Nicu has got a friendship with some of the other candidates. There's sort of links wherever you look at it, but we'll wait and see who gets the job.
Peter Philopoulos has been approached, and he's part of the process right now. The Football Federation of Victoria CEO. So a lot of it is about trying to get more government funds, which is a crucial part of the job. So someone in that role, I think, will be seen as a very good option. I've only got 2 months to get this. I mean, you know, David Gallop leaves in December, and let's be honest, everyone knows when you're leaving a job, you start checking out a bit. I'm sure he's already been appointed to another board somewhere. They've really got to get this process going, and you would think in the next month, appoint someone so they can start getting their head around it and hit the ground running.
Well, I was told on Friday night that that's what they're looking at is interviews in the next 2 or 3 weeks and an appointment by the end of November. Most people will have long notice periods, but generally they don't have to serve those. Mm. And over, you know, Christmas, New Year is always very quiet in Australia. You'd have someone beginning in February, and you wouldn't notice the gap much. There's Peter Abraham, who's the other candidate guy who was run the Melbourne Grand Prix, involved in the Sydney Olympic bid, and been a financier in the Middle East.
Good fella, loves football as well.
Yeah, was on the board of South Melbourne for a while. Yeah. I believe he's in the mix. And obviously, James Johnson. Interesting, James Johnson's experience at AFC as Director of External Affairs there. That's an important part of the role. Our relations in Asia are not great.
Yeah.
And someone like that.
And work closely with FIFA.
Absolutely. It could open doors.
I mean, a lot of people have said this role is going to be diluted, and it will be in a sense because you don't have responsibilities in the A-League. But I think it's as important as ever because you've got to maintain that connection with the owners and make sure you're working with them. We can't have two separate entities. Certainly not fighting against each other because that is going to be a huge problem for the game. The national teams are going to need an advocate against the owners, let's be honest, who might say, well, we want money for our clubs and it shouldn't necessarily go back. That money is going to be needed to strengthen our national teams, which is still, you watch the Socceroos on Thursday night, 18,000 there in Canberra on a Thursday night against Domino. It's crucial for our game.
Half of them were Nepalese, to be fair.
Well, maybe. But it was still a great turnout.
Yeah, it was.
So then they need a strong advocate. And I think that CEO is going to have to do that. And then government funds, which is something we've been banging on about for a while.
I wouldn't say it's a diluted role. It's a different role.
Different role, yes. But compared to what David Gallop was doing in terms of the prominence, you know, he won't be in front of the cameras as much, but behind the scenes, he'll need to be doing as much work as ever, or she, if a female gets the job.
That government role is crucial. Mm. We have to start getting the money that the game not only needs, but in terms of the participation base, deserves.
Let's get into some Twitter questions. A good one from Noel Hopper. The Socceroos currently have four players in the European top leagues, Moy, Ryan, Leckie, Brandon Borrello in the Bundesliga. Within the current squad, who do you think could be the next player to feature in one of the very top leagues?
Well, I did a piece on that this morning, charting the decline in the number of players they've got playing in the top league. So 2005, it was 16, 9 in the EPL alone, and now we're down to 5. And the only, if you include Tom Rogic playing at Celtic, and a lot of people wouldn't include the SPL in as a top league in Europe, it's a really difficult one. It shows that how, as the opposition's got better, we've dropped off. I know this isn't quite answering the question, but it's important context.
I'll answer the question. Awamobile. I think he's got the potential to play Premier League or Bundesliga, you know, one of those top leagues. He's pacey, he's direct, he influences games. He's now getting great experience, not only the Danish league with Michelin winning trophies, but playing in Europe as well. I think he's primed to go to one of those. I'm not saying he's going to go to a Man United. Well, maybe Man United at the moment. But, you know, one of the really top clubs. I did, didn't I? Just on that, by the way, did you see Marcus Rashford has won Man United's goal of the month for September? It was a penalty. It was the only goal they scored in September. Just thought I'd drop that in. I think Mabil could well end up Premier League, Bundesliga, somewhere like that.
Good question. I thought Trent Sainsbury would be it, but he's dropped off the radar now. I think Alex Gersbach has the talent to play at a higher level. He's just not getting a game at the moment. Maybe Jackson Irvine or Mas Luongo, if they have breakthrough seasons in the championship, can get the call up. But it's looking unlikely at this stage, let's be honest. Irvine probably more likely than Luongo right now.
Based on cameos at the World Cup, I still think Daniel Azani can do it.
And Azani, of course. Ooh. Can most certainly.
He's got to get fit and ready, hasn't he?
Just on Tom Rogic, who might be another one. You know, it was reported out of Scotland, actually, that he had his wedding during the international break. What do we make of that?
Well, I wrote a piece about this a couple of weeks
ago.
Yeah, so months ago, they planned out his recovery, and they said, you definitely won't be ready for September, probably won't be ready for October. And he put his wedding off, I believe, in order to have the operation that he needed in the off-season.
That's fair enough.
So I think there was a decision made that you probably won't be fit we're not going to rush you here, but there's a bit of to and fro as well, club and country, you know, not wishing to.
You'd imagine Arnie would have been across that.
Yes.
Well, that's fair. That's fair enough then.
Yes. Based on that, he probably wouldn't be fully fit. Yeah. And it was, if it had been Japan in the second phase, much different question.
Yeah, but sure. There was some discussion around that on Thursday night, and some people said, is that the best look? I'm happy you've cleared it up, because a number of people were saying, how did that come to pass that you'd organise your wedding in an international break? And it was reported out of Scotland that he just decided to have it then.
Well, a lot of footballers, I mean, they have to plan their weddings and their honeymoons because obviously, particularly in Europe, there's only a 6-week off-season. So you've got to get that date absolutely right, haven't you? Particularly if you're playing at World Cups, European Championships, Asian Cups. Clearly with him having this injury, this was a good window for him to actually...
On fitness grounds alone... It makes sense to leave Tom Rogic out this round because he's got to play 2 World Cup qualifiers in June, thread into the Copa America, and he will go probably a week's holiday and he'll be back in pre-season with Celtic.
And if you want him to miss 2 qualifiers with respect to Nepal and Chinese Taipei, these would be the 2.
But some people were saying when it comes to planning a wedding, you do it minimum 9 months in advance. He chose to do it in an international break, but you've explained why that happened, so it's been clarified. But a lot of people were sceptical as to... Exactly how that all
including you
apart.
By the sounds
yeah and I know exactly how much planning there is so you know it's not something you do I'm finding out in a painful way about how it all
have
comes
you
to
planned
pass.
Yours in an international break Garby
yes I have actually although it might fall in line with the Copa
America. What do we think about that Tom do we think that's legit that
no Garby's I think I'm going to create married? A Twitter firestorm
Speaking of firestorms Zeljko Kalac knows how to start one. He's a person you go to for a crack at someone at the moment, Zeljko, and I think a couple of journalists have done just that. He made comments about Warren Joyce, saying he was out of his depth in Australian football, that there was no tactical background to the way that he approached things with Melbourne City, and it was all about just worrying about the opposition. He also made comments on Mile Jedinak, saying, don't come back to Australia. Every former Socceroo star who comes back here just becomes someone who gets knocked down by the public, and why would you want to do that? Yeah. What did you make of those comments?
That's not true. I think there have been a lot of Socceroos who've come back who've done very, very well and been appreciated. But, you know, I think some of the Socceroos who come back here, certainly maybe not so much now, but in the earlier days, you know, I'm particularly talking about some of the golden generation, they expected to come and play in the A-League and just be fated for who they were. Well, I'm sorry, if you're coming back as a pro footballer, and this is where Mark Viduka was smart, he decided to retire because he wanted to go out with people remembering him playing in the Premier League and for Australia at World Cups, etc. But if you're going to come back and play in the A-League, you still have to perform. You're still a professional player. And because you've reached that standard, of course people are going to expect and demand a bit more from you. And if you're that good, which obviously a lot of them were, they accept that responsibility. So I don't cop that. You know, I mean, the media's job and the public's job, you know, they go and watch the games and they're critical if you don't play well, if you play well and score goals or, you know, stop them if you're a keeper or whatever, they'll praise you. If you play rubbish, then you're going to get smashed. That's just football.
Absolutely it is. I think one of his other comments was that football people aren't being involved enough in decision-making in the game.
I mean, well, that might be right.
Short of him saying former players who played in Serie A on the bench a lot are not being involved enough. I mean, it was a slightly self-interested argument.
I would say so.
He's always good for comment, though, Spider.
Yeah, he's happy to fire up. What do we think Mile might do? It's an interesting one. I mean,
it's a long time between drinks not playing.
And at his age, to miss out a whole season and come back for MacArthur, I mean, there's reason to be sceptical as to how he might go if that's the way it transpires in the end. And at the moment, that seems the most likely scenario.
If you are talking about the potential for a Socceroo coming back and getting smashed because he's not up to it anymore, you're kind of almost setting that up by not playing for so long and then going to an area where everyone's going to want you to succeed, but it's a stand-up startup club. You need everyone to be fit and firing. You can't carry anybody. I mean, what a phenomenal individual to have around the club, but whether he should be in the middle of the park week in, week out?
Well, I'll play devil's advocate. You know, Miller's not stupid. He knows that he will, A, have to get his body right, and B, he'll have to perform. He's played in the A-League before. It's not like he's, you know, come into a league, even if he's from Australia, he's never played in. He has. He knows what it's about. He knows the standard required, and I'm sure he'll know that it's improved since he left as well. So he'll need to get himself right. I think... You know, providing his body is right, I think it would be a great signing for MacArthur. He's an iconic Australian, you know. He's the guy who captained us to the Asian Cup in 2015. Why wouldn't you want him involved?
No reason.
Maybe even as, you know, some sort of a player stroke development coach, because he's obviously going to look towards the next.
He is keen on coaching.
Well, there you go. So if you have him as a part of the squad, and maybe he doesn't play every game, but no,
that's
he's also involved
matter.
In
I think
coaching.
That would be fantastic. Mm. My only concern in that context of that those comments from Kalach is would he be able to play 90 minutes every week and affect a game when he had not played for so long? It's just a question you've got to consider.
A question from Daniel Palomara as we move on. Why wasn't Chris Economides picked for the national team? He looked sharp for the glory. I think it's because he had
just
delayed
like game time.
Yeah, he had a delayed preseason. Yeah. Arnie said, there's no point me taking you out of the glory. Get your fitness up, play.
He'll be in the mix.
We don't need you against Nepal and Chinese Taipei. Smart management. And is Berisha still the most lethal striker in Australia? I'm not sure about that, but there were some sceptics when he signed for Western United saying this is simply a publicity stunt to get under the nose of the Victory to generate that rivalry. He proved that's not the case.
He's lethal when left alone in the penalty area from 8 yards out. That the big question marks over Phoenix's marking, but he was in the right place.
Great run from Connor Payne. Great run from Josh Risden on the other flank to knock it back across.
Connor Payne looks, fit and firing, doesn't he?
Mm.
From Chris James, Central Coast look competitive in the first round. Stadjic already has them playing better. Could they make the top six? I'm not sure they have the quality for the top six, but I think the laughing stock days seem gone.
Yeah.
The lack of goals is what worries me.
That's the problem. That's the problem. Jordan Murray had a few opportunities, didn't he, at the weekend? I know Matt Simon wasn't involved. Matt, with the greatest respect, is a very handy player to have in your squad, but I'm not sure he's going to be a 15, 20 goal a season striker. So who's going to get those goals? You know, you're looking at some of the others maybe to chip in. Danny De Silva needs to chip in. Tommy Orr needs to chip in. But Murray and Simon, I'm trying to think who they've got another striker.
Yeah, they've got Abraham Ajok.
Abraham Ajok. He's still finding his way. I don't know. I'm with you. I think the lack of goals is going to be a problem. But I do think they'll have a better season. If they avoid the spoon, that's progress.
And a question from Walter Schmidt. Their passing game he wants to discuss. I mean, they looked really sharp. We spoke about them before in Diamante and Kone and McDonald. But you're right. What they might lack in leg speed, they'll make up for in intelligence.
The way Phoenix played last year under Roots. They moved the ball around nicely. He likes the passing team. It's an aggressive up-tempo style, but it's also based on playing football.
And then the fullbacks do the running. The likes of Connor Payne, who we saw in Risden, they get around those players who are knocking it about. And if you've got someone to finish, then you can be a team who moves up the ladder and perhaps challenges for a final spot. Let's go through the games next week. The Victory against the Wanderers on Friday night, Marvel Stadium. That should be another healthy crowd and a beauty. Then Western United play their first home game against the Perth Glory, GMHBA. Let's be honest, it's not a stadium for football, but still a big occasion on Saturday afternoon watching them strut out in front of a crew of fans who hopefully will grow as the season goes on, and it's a big moment for them.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only concern. Obviously, I think their membership sales have been pretty slow, around the 2,000 mark. That's perhaps understandable. It's a new club. They're going to be playing in a city which is not going to be their long-term home. These 3 years are going to be a tough balancing act for them. I think they're going to be competitive on the park, as I said already, but they need to try and grow a fan base. And then when they have that new stadium, then they've got lift off, haven't they? But let's hope they get, good crowd. If they could get, 10,000 there at the weekend, maybe that's asking too much, I don't know. But if they could get 10,000 there, that would be a good start.
Saturday night, the Jets are in action for the first time this season in the F3 Derby, which should have a bit of feeling to it. Looking forward to that. Melbourne City against Adelaide United on Sunday, the afternoon game, and then Sydney FC at home to Wellington Phoenix on Sunday night. The Brisbane Roar have the bye in round two. Back to the bye we are.
Absolutely. Not a lot you can say about the bye, really, other than that it's there.
I think it's time we said bye.
Robbie Fowler, unbeaten in his first 2 weeks. It is time we say bye. Tom Smithies, thanks for coming in. Simon Hill.
Thanks, Kirby. Cheers, Tom.
Always.
Phil Pryor, winner Adam and his team doing their podcast?
They'll be on Wednesday. I think they've got Nathan Burns coming in along with Robbie Slater, so it should be good.
Burns. Robbie Slater, Nathan Burns and Adam Peacock for your Wednesday edition of the Fox Football Podcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks for joining us again. Tom, we're off to play. Are you playing in the Sydney FC media game?
Workload permitting, yes.
Right. Well, I'm going to go out there and burst a heart valve, probably, trying to get around a football pitch, but it should be a bit of fun. Thanks for listening. Please join us next week on the Fox Football Podcast. Enjoy all the football action on Fox Sports throughout the weekend.